Well, welcome everybody to the ISP meeting. Everyone's welcome to sit at the table if you wish, plenty of room. This is rather an unusual ISP meeting for us because what we normally do is hone on a couple of particular topics and try and run with those. Originally, we were going to have a separate dialogue with the WHOIS task force that most of us have just met with in the other room. And we were also going to have a session with the new GNSO board member as well. But the changes to the late changes to the actual schedule have made that rather difficult. What we decided to do was to focus on issues where there are some actions to be taken or some information to give out that's particularly pertinent to the constituency. The agenda's been posted on the website, and that's why that was constructed in that way. So it's a little bit different from the format that we normally have. Tony is going to circulate a signing in sheet, and certainly I'd appreciate if everyone can put their details down and return that by the end of the meeting. But we'll start with a round of introductions anyway. And I'm Tony Holmes, and I'm here representing BT, and I chair this constituency. So once you get back, Tony, I'll hand over to you. We're on introductions.
Yes, my name is Tony Harris. I work for the Argentina Internet Association. And I'm obviously a member of the constituency.
Thanks. If we can work around this way. Thank you.
My name is Maudu Sall from Sonatel France Telecom Group.
Thank you.
Rob Vilner from Momentus.
I'm Thomas Rickert representing ICO, the German Association of the German Internet Industry.
Oliver Zume on behalf of the European ISP Association, EuroISPA.
Toshi Tatesh from Japan ISPs Association.
Naomasa Maruyama
with JPNIC.
I'm Yukari Takayama from JPNIC.
Akinu Maimura, JPNIC for Japan Network Information Center, for sure.
I'm Barry Schein from the world, theworld.com.
Bob Hutchinson from Dynamic Ventures.
Dan Alexander, Comcast Cable.
Jim Baskin, Verizon.
Mark McFadden from Interconnect Communications.
Alain Miron from France Telecom, representing France Telecom and ETNO, the European Telecommunication Network Operators Association.
Jeremy Wagner, I'm from Brazilian ISP Associations, and I'm presently in GNSO Council, representing ISP.
Wolfgang Lichtenhofen from Deutsche Telekom in Germany and also on GNSO Council.
Okay, thank you. There were a number of items on the agenda that's been posted, and the first one that's on there was an update on new GTLDs. And when we were pulling together the agenda for this meeting, we obviously weren't aware of what was going to happen yesterday, where we actually stood in that equation. And it was added on to the agenda to see whether there's any follow-on actions from this constituency, anything particularly that impacted us as ISPs that we needed to discuss. I would suggest that the board, having taken the decision to go with the programme for the introduction of the new top-level domains, at this stage, I think we've probably given as much input as we can to that process, and I don't particularly see there are any follow-on actions that we need to pick up on at this meeting, unless anybody actually has a different view of that or wants to express any opinion. I think we can move straight past that item. The next thing on the agenda is the ATRT report, and I know a number of people were here this morning when we discussed this in initially the cross-constituency group and then the follow-on discussion that we had with the board. And the point of that was that they have this list of 27 different recommendations that have been put forward from the ATRT report. Some of them are rather process oriented and are things that staff have to do. Others aren't. Some of those things on there really impact the policy development process itself and the interaction on reviews, on consultations, how we can interact as part of the broader community. And the problem we had was that there was very little understanding as to how this constituency and certainly other constituencies within the CSG can interact with that process. What were the timelines for some of those things? Now, since we raised this when the meeting started, there have been some changes on the website. Additional information has suddenly appeared. It appears that some of the input that staff have to do to move those recommendations forward have started to take place. So we raised the other issues with the board when we had the session with them. And we made the point that we felt we needed to contribute on some of those issues. And we asked for guidance from them as to how we can do that and how we can actually inject into the current process. The way that debate really ended up is that we were asked to look at what comes out in terms of the board meeting on Friday, where they're actually going to pass some resolutions related to the ATRT. And Bruce Tonking gave us an explanation that there was basically three types of issues. There were issues that have, in their mind, have clearly been dealt with, ticked off by the Board Governance Committee. Others which haven't totally been concluded but really are being handled by staff, and most of the process changes came into that. And then there was a third batch of things that needed to be done and haven't been done. Now, if you look at the way the programme's set out, the date for doing all of this was the end of June, which doesn't leave much time after this meeting. And Bruce also added that some of these things aren't going to be completed in that period. So we're at the stage now where we have to wait until Friday to see what's in that third batch, the process issues and some of the things that we need to contribute back on, to basically make sure that what comes out is set out in a way that we can work with that actually helps the policy development process. And we were asked to provide feedback after Friday back to the Board Governance Committee, and we can also forward our comments through to Denise Michel, who's leading for this on the staff side, as to how we feel we can provide information and what that level of information will be. So it's quite hard to actually determine exactly what needs to be done, but we know there is work to do there. And what I'm interested in is to try and get some people who will actually help do that evaluation after Friday and feed into that process so that we can provide the information back to the Board Governance Committee that we said we would do this morning. So what I'm looking for is some indication of who would be part of that process. Alain, from your side, I don't want to particularly lay this at your door, but Olivier was part of the ATRT group, and he's a member of this constituency. Yeah. And certainly I would very much appreciate if you could raise this with Olivier, because I think he would be a great guy to hook into this, having seen it come from grassroots to where we are now.
I have some communication with him every day, so okay. I will raise it with
if
him.
If you could follow that message back.
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah, I will.
So maybe we're at the stage where what I would do then is to ask for some volunteers on the list to actually help with this after Friday, and I don't mind pulling together some initial thoughts of where we are, what to contribute on, working with Olivier. And I think probably we need to get a response back to the board, I would suggest, within a week from the end of this meeting. So if there are people here who would be willing to help with that, I'd very much appreciate either throw me an email or see me at the end of the session.
Tony.
Yes, Wolf Horan.
Charles Wolf speaking. So just for the understanding, you know, 1 week from the end of Friday is not very much, very much time so to have.
But let me clarify that. The intention is not to provide the board with the information on the issues, but to go back to the board governance committee, telling them what particular issues we feel we will be following up on. That's the initial step. It isn't to provide the information itself. And I think with supplying the information, from the conversation we had this morning, we will be doing this probably under the banner of the commercial stakeholder group. So it won't just be an ISPCP input. We need to work with the other constituencies in that stakeholder group.
Is it, to my understanding, to the understanding of that group, is it the goal, the target of that experience is, well, to feed the board governing committee towards the how they should deal with all these recommendations in a priority?
The focus of the conversation this morning was that there were elements of some of those recommendations where it would be useful to have a view from this constituent or from this stakeholder group on those particular aspects. I know on some of them, from speaking with Denise Michelle, it's already planned that there is going to be a consultation period, but none of the information is available. You can search the ATRT website, and there's no information there that tells us which are the issues they're going to consult on, what the consultation periods are. I don't know how far the resolution that's going to be put before the board is actually going to go on Friday. So the first step of this process is really filling in the gaps if there are elements of those recommendations which aren't listed for consultation. We may want to go back and suggest that we may be able to provide some input. There's a lot of concern over the implementation of some of those particular recommendations.
Okay, and is it, just to clarify, is it that we as constituency are going to refer directly to the Board Governance Committee in this respect or through the CSG?
I believe the correct way to do it would be to pull together an initial list, and then we will discuss within the CSG our approach.
So that is on top to that?
That is on top, yeah. So it would be far better if we respond back to the Board Governance Committee from the stakeholder group rather than
but
just the
constituency. But not within 1 week.
Well, we can actually, within a week, I think we've got plenty of time within a week to identify what the items are. We're not going to go back with the detail of what the input is, but just say, yes, on these particular things, we're quite happy now because these are the things we're concerned about, that we're in that third list of things yet to do. If they've set out information that says there's going to be an open consultation and they're going to seek input, that would be fine by us. We can just say to them, we will provide input on this. But if there are clearly things in there, recommendations, where they aren't seeking input, but primarily affect the work of the constituency or the GNSO, then this is our one opportunity to suggest that they may want to have some dialogue with the community or this part of the community first.
So I would prefer, prefer very much if Alain, if you could trigger Olivier immediately, let me say, by email. That he is the one, you know, I think he will do that, you know, just and then on the list just so we can circulate our opinions on that.
I agree with that because I think Olivier may have a little bit more information on the follow-up on some of these things than we have, as he was part of the committee.
Should this list of issues be articulated also with the CSG in this week?
No.
I can't really speak about that because we haven't had a chance to get together as CSG to discuss this since we came out of the board meeting before lunch.
I think it's a daunting
What I will do is be speaking with the other chairs of the other two groups after this meeting to tell them where we are, and at that stage I would either seek to get some information from them telling me that they'll do it the same way, or if not, we would just go ahead and do it as a constituency. I think that we owe a response back to the Board Governance Committee after the dialogue this morning. So thank you. That's an action to follow up on for Elaine, and also an action for me as well. The next issue on the agenda was GNSO improvements, and there's been a lot of traffic on this on the GNSO mailing list recently. I'd like to turn to our councillors now to actually get some information from you as to the way the process within the OSC is being concluded and where we are, what needs to be done. So Wolf Ulrich, perhaps you could help with that one.
Yeah, thank you, Tony. So you might remember the GNSO improvement process, which means on the one hand a restructuring of the whole GNSO and the GNSO Council. It took roughly 3 years to get implemented. So the ideas of the review team for the improvement, they gave the report 3 years ago, and then we started, so it's different on different levels. So right now, the GNSO is in a status, I would say, where it is fixed, I would say. So it is fixed, which is funny because I think at first the board review team was of the opinion after 3 years to start a new review, but right now they gave up and say that okay, not before 5 years and not before the first improvement process has really been settled. So so we are from the organizational point of view, I would say we are. We are finished. We have some smaller items to do, which was done by the OSC. There was, with regards to the rules of procedure for the council, there were some open points with the voting process and these things. These have been settled, and they are in the pipe for public comment and for the approval by the council itself. There was another big item to be solved. That was to implement a new policy development process, which is of major importance for the whole GNSO. And this discussion also took at least 2 years or 2.5 years. I was a member of that group as well. This working team, under the leadership of Jeff Newman, they provided their report right now, and this report is out for public comment, the very last report as well. And I would like to not to urge you, but really to be happy. Well, if you all as the ones who are dealing with these items as well could have a look to that process, to that paper, and in case there are any things to comment from your side, please do so. I was asking last time when this meeting was prepared by Tony whether we could have a chance or might have a chance, well, to get an update or just a brief presentation. What is it about, this policy development process, and where are the major items having been changed in comparison to the former one? I would like to leave that question as well for discussion here, whether we should have a chance, well, on a short term, maybe on a conference call or so. I think staff is provided. Marika Konings, for example, she is the one who is very deeply involved in that development, to provide us with a, let me say, a 20-minute presentation about that. And that could give you a broad vision of that, what is it about, this is PDP. This PDP shall be the basis for the next years, how the GNSO is going to work and is going to handle the policy development, or this guideline. So this is a major item which has been almost done. Other things were related with more organizational things. That there was the working group guidelines. They are also in the pipe and they are implemented already. And we have, in addition, the so-called toolkit that was implemented already, maybe last year as well, or staff started to implement that. So that means these are the tools which are requested from the community, from the GNSO community, towards ICANN to get assistance in, for example, providing assistance in preparing meetings, in keeping up updated websites and all these things. This is something we should also take into consideration in the future as regards how we, as ISPCP, can take advantage of this toolkit. Another point is, after all these implementation things have been done right now, so the recommendations have been approved by the council. The council was discussing, how shall we follow those recommendations right now with the implementation, and how shall we ensure that those recommendations are going to be implemented in an effective way, so that is really the result of this implementation shall be that what we requested. And therefore, a new committee was created. So what I have the pleasure to chair that. That is the Standing Committee on Improvement Implementation. So we supervise, let me say, a little bit this process, but in a more reactive way. We don't go actively that way and say, okay, this has to be improved and start a new improvement process, rather than to look at if somebody comes up, if one group comes up and is claiming, okay, there is something going on wrong because we a toolkit or with something else. So please help us. Please just discuss this internally and how that could be improved. So that's what this committee is about. So I don't expect in the very near future many items to be brought up, because people have to get experience with the new implemented processes as well. So that's more or less about the improvements.
Thanks, Wolf. I have a couple of questions. Did I hear you say, did I catch right, that the intention is that there wouldn't be a review for 5 years of GNSO? Is that what you said?
Well, that was in the minds of the board, but that means, okay, it's still in the mind of the board, and maybe it's also resolved by the board, but in addition, it means not to start with a new review before the other has been effectively implemented. So really, the board has a cycle established. So if you look to the, it is a structural improvement committee, which is chaired by Ray Plusak. So he is, they have a timeline, if you look at this. So we are at the end, more or less. So others are following. CCNSO has just started with improvements, and others are also following that process. But afterwards, there will be a cycle once, I would say, you know, and maybe after 5 years, so to start a new review process.
Well, worries me a little that you say 5 years after it was effectively implemented, because I wonder what the measures are to decide.
No, it's not 5 years after it has been implemented, so it's every 5 years. You know, every 5 years. Yeah. So that means from the beginning, we started 3 years ago, it may be in 2 years.
Alan?
My memory is that it is something clearly stated in the bylaws.
Yes.
So if you remove from 3 years to 5 years, it should be, bylaws should be changed.
Well, that was also my understanding as well, and it's a worrying precedent if suddenly one group steps out of that.
Yep. Okay, so then let me say it clear. So it may be in the bylaws, so it may also be that there is no resolution by the board saying, okay, it is 5 years, but they were discussing, because the GNSO came up and was saying, okay, what shall we do after 3 years? Right now we are not really finished right now, so shall we really start again with that? And then the board was discussing that, and the proposal was, okay, maybe let's stay with that, with that 3 years, but also say, okay, not before the former process has been implemented, the former improvement has been implemented, because it doesn't make sense.
Was that a request from the GNSO to the board, or a proposal from the GNSO to the board?
Oh. No, it was a message, no, isn't it?
I don't think it has been a formal request.
No formal request, but it was discussed several times with staff, with Rob Hogart also, and he communicated this message to the board as well.
Right, Alan?
I think if the board have to take action here, there should be a clear message coming from the GNSO, and not only informal discussion about that. Because if the bylaws have to be changed, you see some impact. That said, I think it would be a very good thing to move from 3 years to 5 years. Because it was a complex change, the GNSO reform, and to change it every 3 years, obviously it will be difficult. Yeah. The other point I want to mention on reviews is that you said that there is some cycle with the CCNSO. I don't know if you are aware that there is an ASO review underway. And I think this is of interest for the ISP community and the operators community. My understanding is that there is a contract with Olivier Ranou, and Raimundo Becca is involved also. And it should be interesting for those of us who are involved in IP addressing to contact them to see how the review will proceed.
You mean that
Raimundo is involved, Raimundo Becca.
But so as I understand, there would be a need for the GNSO Council to request formally an extension of this review. Yeah.
Well, let's separate out the two issues, because Alain raised another one which is very pertinent to this conversation. But let's go back to the first point, the one you raised, Jeremy. I think it would be good for us as a constituency to ask yourself and Wolf Ulrich to get some clarity as to where that decision sits in terms of when will the next review of the GNSO take place, because just to be able to swat aside a review and say, oh, we're going to do it in 5 years, there may well be justification for doing that, but the fact that it goes against the bylaws doesn't really sit that well, particularly when I think we're all aware that some of the other reviews have been pretty late coming on stream anyway. So if the current bylaws aren't working, that's up to the board to take some action to reconsider that. But in terms of the GNSO review, it's such a fundamental part of our work, of the policy development process. I think we would seek some clarity as to where that sits. And if the answer is, well, it's going to be a couple of years after the current review becomes effective, I would like to determine when that effective date is. So we've all got a clear indication of when the GNSO review is going to be done again. The last review, I would say that we were less than happy with some elements of that, but we were where we were. We've certainly, yourself and Wolf Ulrich, have been actively engaged in developing the process to put in place an implementation of those recommendations so it works in a good way. But it's not a good thing to have just an open order for when the next one takes place. So if I could ask you to follow this through in council so we can get some clear understanding as to when the review cycle would happen, that would be really helpful.
Okay, we shall have Thursday in a wrap-up meeting in the council, and I'll bring it up.
Thank you. That would be excellent if you could do that. And maybe some people will certainly be at that meeting, others won't. Perhaps I could ask you to put a note to the list after, just what the clarification is on that. Now to move on to the other point that Alain raised, and again, I agree with him, it's a really important issue for us, is that we need to certainly engage with the ASO review. And I think your proposal, Alain, was that it would be best to do that with individual members making contact with that rather than as a constituency.
I think both are possible, to have a position coming from our constituency, and in addition to have individual contact with the people that were recruited by the NRO to provide the first step of the review, that is the external analysis.
Let's think about how we can do this. I agree with the fact that members of this constituency can actually go, and would encourage them to make contact with the review team to give them some input. But I don't know, do you know, Mark, what the time frame is for completion of that review? I was just wondering, because the problem we've had with that, I think it would have been on our agenda if it had been announced earlier, but the ASO review, it was due to start, I think, about 3 months ago now. The contract for that has only just been awarded recently, so the whole schedule has slipped back. But I'm not aware of what the timeline is now for that review, because if it fitted, it would be a great thing to add to our agenda when we have the Senegal meeting, to actually meet with that team and provide some input. But I don't know whether anything's been posted.
I will be in contact with Olivier Ranou tomorrow, so I can ask him what is exactly the time frame of the review, and to see if we have time to contact them during the meeting in Senegal, and to have a position coming from our constituency, or if it will be closed at that meeting.
Again, Alain, could I ask
and come back to you to see exactly what is the time frame for the review, and or we can provide input individually or as a constituency.
Could you send a note to the list with that time frame detail on, and then we can decide?
I will tomorrow.
Okay. Because if we have an opportunity to meet with them as a constituency, that would be easily the best way. Some of the things that they're looking at in Senegal. No, I don't think we're in a position now where we could just do that on the hoof. So we need some time to prepare for that. But it would be great if they haven't concluded, and it's at a stage where we can provide input as a constituency at Senegal with a face-to-face session with that team. That would be great. I know the guys are here, but the contract, I think it's only been awarded within days of this meeting. Another issue I want to pick up on, Wolf Ulrich, if I can with you. You actually mentioned it, and that was the toolkit. Yeah. And the GNSO toolkit, the list of features that you can take advantage of, has been out for some time. And I'd actually had a conversation with Rob Hogarth and also with Glenn, GNSO's secretary, because when we had some initial discussion on one of our calls, and this is probably going back the best part of 4 or 5 months ago, we actually identified issues on the GNSO toolkit that would be particularly useful to this constituency. But the items that we listed, unfortunately, were the ones that weren't available. It was the web hosting, and there was some other support that they couldn't do at that time. I don't think that's changed. I think there are still items on that toolkit list which aren't available. But I had a conversation with Rob here yesterday, and it would still be helpful to him to actually have a list of the things that we would want if everything was available, and the things that we would like off that list now. And the reason for that is that they're trying to look at towards the future budget and an operating plan to put in those requirements. So I believe one of the things we should do on the first call we have after this meeting here is actually to focus down on the toolkit. Jamie? Well,
one thing that's not clear to me is that the toolkit, as I understood today from Chris Chaplow's talk, is that the toolkit is intended for a group, and a group can be a constituency or the commercial stakeholders group or the GNSO Council.
Correct.
And I think we could put forward a request for this constituency toolkit, and not to tie it to the GNSO Council toolkit.
Let me clarify. What you said is correct. The toolkit has been produced for the GNSO, but the items listed are available. I think you listed three groups. You said for council, for CSG, and for constituencies. It actually goes to a layer lower than that. It's also available
to working groups.
To working groups as well. My intention was to itemize off of that things purely for this constituency.
Yes.
And I would suggest that we need to produce that list reasonably quickly. So the very next call we have, I'll circulate details of what's on the toolkit, what the options are. And on the next call, I think we need to prioritise what they are and return a list to Rob.
What about the support for the website? What they said about that?
Yes, the conversation I had with Rob yesterday, he said that that's one of the things that isn't available.
Because precisely Chris Chaplow's company was in charge of doing something about that. Yeah. Did you know it?
I didn't know. Let me follow up. I'll talk with Rob, find out what the break is, what's available and what isn't, prior to the next call, and on the next call, then we'll make our decisions as to what's applicable to us and what isn't. I think both the BC and the IP have actually sent in their details, but the reason we didn't send ours in was because I think we selected something like five things and three of those were just not available, so we waited and held back. But I think we should probably send something through now.
Tony, one question. How are we going to deal with it? So I understand we had a short list, or didn't we?
We had a short list, but I think we should take a fresh look at that. And if I think we picked five things. I think we should go back now and just, I'll get some clarity from Rob, what's currently available, what isn't available, and we'll produce a new list and feed that back to Rob. Because some of the other things, the conversation I had with Rob, some of the other things aren't going to actually be available probably within this fiscal year. Some of them will roll into the next.
So are you going to...
I'll do that.
...double do that. Yes. Thank you.
I've got one other issue related to the GNSO improvements as well. There was one other group set up that I don't think you mentioned, Wolf Ulrich, and there was a recommendation to develop a global outreach program to broaden the participation in the GNSO. My understanding is that that group has now been formed, the charter's been agreed. I think the chair's been appointed as well, which I think is Olga Gavelli. And again, I think that I know there's a lot of working groups around, but that is a group that I think we should have some input to.
This is a cross community working group, JAS.
No, it isn't JAS.
The outreach program, yeah?
It's an outreach program to broaden the participation.
But
and I'll just look at what the...
Is the one that Olga is chairing, yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Part of it is focused towards outreach to members of the public, particularly non-English speakers and from developing countries and regions. And the second part of the charter is looking at the development of global outreach programs to increase participation. So it's really for much broader engagement. It's part of the GNSO improvement. But this group is just being set up. And I'm just looking at the charter, and it says the purpose of this group, which is termed the OTF, Outreach Task Force, is to coordinate, recommend, consolidate and assist with the execution of the GNSO's outreach objectives. And membership is open far broader than the GNSO stakeholders community. So a lot of it is going to be focused towards developing countries. And I think the first task is going to be to undertake a survey to identify who actually is actively involved in the policy work within the domain name system, and to try and plug where the gaps are. And I think it would be quite helpful for this constituency to support this particular working group.
It would be great to have somebody from developing countries that would participate in this group in the name of the ISPCP constituency.
So really looking for somebody to represent this
volunteers
constituency within that particular working group.
Besides me and Tony.
You're not actively members, though, are you? No. You mean in terms of volunteers? Okay. Well, dropping these things in these conversations is always difficult, but what I'll do after this meeting is send the link for this particular group to the website, and maybe you can have a look at that. And even if there are members who aren't currently here that have an active interest in that. It would be good to have some representation on that task force.
I do try to involve some of the ISPs associations in Brazil to volunteer for this work group, but they asked me for the kind of support they would have, and I couldn't say anything. Participation.
Okay. So, moving down our agenda, the next item is again going to bounce back to our council representatives because, and I think Tony has something to report on here as well, it's the recent activity within the cross-community working groups. I know there have been a lot of discussion around jazz in particular, but could I ask you to provide us with an update?
I think we could divide this update into two reports. The first is on the jazz working group. And I would like Tony, that is an active member of this group, to report. And then I would like to report from a more generic perspective how the council is envisaging the necessity for a little more formal approach of these cross-community working groups. And we formed a drafting team in the council, to which I am a member of, to discuss and reach some proposal for the general cross-community working groups, and we are in the pace of discussing this in this working team. But I think the jazz working group deserves a particular report, and I would ask Tony to do that.
Just before you do, the group that you're working in, Jamie, that's looking at the way these groups should actually operate, is there a timeline for you to finish that?
No. We had a report here in Singapore, and right now we are discussing if this group should be a GNSO group or should already be open to other SOs and or ACs to members of other SOs and ACs, or if we go with a proposal from GNSO to them already closed. And I advocate to be an already open group from the beginning.
Okay, thanks. Tony, do you want to cover off jazz, please?
Well, the Joint Applicant Support Group, known as JAZZ, not jazz the music, it's J-A-S, actually began work, I think, about 15 months ago. It was before Brussels, definitely. I've always been a part of this group in the initial stages, and up to right now, it's pretty much a multi-stakeholder participation type of group. You've got a lot of people from the ALAC participating, very few people from the GNSO, I think probably two of us at the most. And people from the NCUC particularly. The group started off from something the ICANN wanted done by a working group, which was to determine if there was any way needy applicants for new GTLDs could have some form of support. Having been pretty much involved in analyzing the previous application rounds, well, my suggestion to the group initially was look at the application fee. The application fee is explained in various ICANN documents, it is a huge increase from the previous round in 2004 from $45,000 to $185,000, although a lot of justification has been put into the documents as to why they are this significant increase in the application fee has happened. And basically, the group spent a few months spinning their wheels about how they could get funding from all over the world for this, and everybody would want to put money in and help the needy applicants for TLDs. I said, you know, you're looking in the wrong direction. That's not going to happen. And from what we've seen in conclusion in the last couple of days, and which has been a part of the board resolutions on Monday, they ended up, the group has ended up in their report and proposals asking ICANN to put up the money, not the funding agencies, who I'm sure would not be doing that, such as the World Bank or IDB or anybody like that. And the other thing, of course, which they have done is the sensible thing to ask for a reduction for the on the application fee, which by the percentage, I think it's 69% reduction they are asking for needy applicants, really puts the applicant fee at $45,000, which was the previous price. So after 15 months of a lot of conferences, there are teleconferences twice a week, to give you an idea, and a lot of mail traffic going back and forth. But since the GAC has stepped in and being very vocal in supporting the demands of the jazz, it looks like they're going to get what the group is going to get what is being requested. In other words, $2 million from ICANN as a seed fund and a very, very significant reduction in the application fee. Vis-a-vis a normal applicant who will have to pay $185,000. There is, I think, a lot of a possibility for gaming in the as to who is going to be awarded these benefits, because the wording of the milestone report, which the Jazz has produced, does include companies and for-profit organizations in developing countries who, without help, could not apply for a top-level domain. So I think there is some ground, or we will see some ground for friction, confusion, a need for revision in the future on the way this is being presented. But that's my personal opinion. But in conclusion, thanks to the intervention of the GAC, what seemed to be a train that was going nowhere has suddenly become something with a lot of prospects of getting what they want. Any questions? I'd be happy to respond.
You mentioned, Tony, the fee is likely to go down to $45,000. And you mentioned the figure that was pushed around yesterday to support applicants, the $2 million mm-hmm. that ICANN suddenly announced yesterday that they were going to use for this. How do those things relate together? Is it that the fee for some of these applicants from developing countries reduces down to $45,000 and they get the seed funding as well?
The seed funding is not in the milestone report. That appears to have happened in the last 10 days or something. I wasn't able to participate in the most recent calls. I was traveling. But my understanding is that the reduction of the application fee is a reduction of the application fee. And the question of additional support from the seed funding is basically to sort of nurse the new, if the new applicant is successful and gets awarded a top-level domain, he will need some, he or the entity will need some nursing to get started and cover their expenses and so forth. That's my reading of it. I could be wrong.
Mark?
I was wondering, one of the features of the $185,000 is that over and over we've been told that it's supposed to be based on just cost recovery, that's what it costs to do the evaluations, the applications. And so it seems like it has to be a zero-sum game. Do you know what I mean? That if you do the cost reductions, those costs have to be recovered some other way, if you believe ICANN's rhetoric about the $185,000. Have you heard anything about where the money's going to come from?
Well, your question, you've actually put in a more eloquent way my question, because that's what I was asking. Is the $2 million plug in that gap? Or is it the fact you have a cost reduction for certain applicants, and they also benefit from the $2 million seed funding?
Well, I don't think... Does anyone know where the $2 million number came from?
Is it
a random number?
That's new. I think the GAC... I believe there was some mention in the Sunday conversations when this was discussed at the meeting on Sunday. And I was, you know, pretty dead from my trip, but I did seem to hear that the GAC had requested something along these lines, and there was an expectation that the private sector or other organizations would match that fund, in other words, make it $4 million.
That's interesting, because I had misunderstood that, because on Sunday I thought that it was ICANN staff. It was actually Rod who had
I got into the meeting halfway through.
Yeah.
I could have missed something.
I think, Tony, the right answer here is, unless someone else can answer this, I think the right answer is we don't know.
Yeah.
We'll follow it.
Yes, that's right. And so, you know, this whole stuff was going forward and backward over the last weeks between on several levels. So on the one level, I think as an outsider, you cannot understand this internal process, how it was going on. So you have a jazz report, so it's on the press as well. You know, if you read what was happening on Monday, so the decision was taken, and if you read newspapers, so what is in the press, there's already in, okay, there is support, reduction of the application fee plus some sort of money which I can shall provide. So that's what has been picked up. Nobody cares really what internally is the status. So, for example, that the GNSO did not yet approve this report, which led to the request of JAS towards ICANN, well, give us something, some support. You know? So, okay, this is practice, you know, so it's reality right now. So, so the $2 million figure came up for me the first time on Sunday afternoon during the discussion between GAC and board. Mm-hmm. Somebody was saying that, and Peter was picking that up. Yes, we had some discussion with him board, and there might be a figure about that. And somebody else from GAC was saying, okay, it's not enough, and these things. Anyway, from my point of view, if you look towards the developing part of the world, you know, and you expect so-called needy applicants from their time, then $2 million is nothing. It's really nothing. So they will start to struggle about, you know, who gets what and how much. Or so and so it's really nothing. And that was also the point which was George Sadowski raising, you know, saying, okay, why should I can open this bottle? We cannot solve the basic problems of a development part of the world, you know, through this. Yeah. Anyway, it's going on that. We will have also here at ICANN a so-called preparation meeting for a summit, for an ICANN summit, which should take place in Dakar. This is organized by the board member Katim Touré, so he is very behind of that. Well, in order to get it structured and then to get more focus on this item. For me, the story is not over because, for example, the definition of a needy applicant,
yes,
does not only mean developing countries. So if you look at this, so I would say in Germany we have a lot of needy applicants. Yeah, so as well, so in other parts of the world, yeah. So I think this discussion has to be taken place. Who is it at the end? Mm-hmm. Who could come to the table and ask for something? Yeah, some support. It's been funny, but okay. Anyway, this reflects also what we are coming from with regards to that topic, so the question of how to organize the so-called cross working groups in the future, because it has been turned out that the model we have been using for this specific group doesn't really work. So the model means, so just put GNSO and ALA together and then it shall happen. So there is it's a constitutional problem, and is on top is a procedural problem as well. So, and this has to be solved by the board in discussion with the community. How, in case we will have more and more costs over working groups in the future, how we can deal with it?
I'd just like to comment on what you said, Wolf Ulrich. We should remember that this very similar proposal from the Jazz Group was turned down by the ICANN board in October of last year. It was flatly refused. They said you have to find funding outside of ICANN. So it would seem that this new decision, which is very different from that by the board, might respond to the need to appease the demands from the GAC. I mean, there was this decision to be taken on Monday, and that was something which was knocking around the room and making a lot of noise. So I think there may have been some of that in this change of position, because they were flatly refused in October when they presented this.
Yeah. Thomas,
I couldn't agree more, Tony. I have the stomach feeling that this 2 million is just a ballpark figure that was deemed high enough to end the conversation with the GAC, and that nobody really thought about cost recovery and all those issues. But I think, you know, while I do appreciate the idea of helping needy applicants, I think reducing the application fees is just one face of the coin. That's where the problem starts. What do you do with registry backend service costs? What do you do with DNS costs? What do you do with legal advice and all that you need for the operations? So that, you know, I think it's okay to get that out of the way in order to get the process started. But at the same time, I would agree with the ICANN board's opinion that this needs to be placed outside ICANN for equal treatment as well as for other reasons. You need an independent fund that would subsidize the whole package, right, so that they can get operational, and you can even get some kickback if they are successful at the end of the day. So I think that this is not very well thought out, but just my personal view.
Jeremy.
First, I would like to add an information that this Jazz working group had two charters, one from ALAC and the other from GNSO. And the report was the last report of the working group was not it was submitted to the GNSO Council, but it was not yet approved by the GNSO Council. So this left the impression that the GNSO Council were or the GNSO in general was against needy applicants. That was the reading that and that was given also by the board to GAC in the first place, and they tried to and GAC put this as a point in the last Sunday as a point to. And I don't think it was the main point, but it was pushed as if it was to refrain to the approval of the new GTLD program. So this $2 million came out of the hat, you know, and just as a way of accommodating things. But my personal opinion is that the reduction of the fee is something that is should be given to the needy applicants, and this $2 million is not enough, and I don't know from where they brought this figure. But anyway, the figure of the reduction, I think it is okay.
Well, I thought I had an answer to where the fee was coming from this morning, because if you remember when we had the discussion in the CSG, Chris Chaplow said that there was basically £9 million he'd identified in the budget that was just sort of hanging around. It hasn't been accounted for. But when we went into... But when we went into the meeting with the board and Chris made that point there, they said, no, that figure comes out of a different side of the budget. It comes out of policy budget, not that side of the budget. So I was totally confused where that discrepancy was, and Bruce made the point that the budget for the new GTLDs has to remain cost neutral. So I think when you have your discussion in GNSO around the approval of that JAS report, bearing in mind what happened on Sunday, where there was this sudden figure plucked out of the air, I assume that's going to come into the council discussions now. The other thing I'd ask is that Thomas made the point, some good points about supporting independently the needy cases, and I think when you have those discussions in GNSO again, those points probably need to be made into that discussion. Do you have any feeling at the moment from the initial dialogue you've had in council as to whether the JAS report as it stands that was approved by the ALAC, do you have any feel for whether it's likely to be approved in GNSO or not? It's likely to be approved, even though there is now this issue of support for needy cases. Changes.
Yeah, my reading is that there is a strong pressure from for it to be approved, you know? And this new information is not. I mean, this figure of $2 million is not in the report So it's another thing, and it supersedes the report. So I don't see why not the report should be approved, because it is now it is below the suggestions that are below what has already been announced by the board.
Right. So currently, with the fact you haven't had any other feedback as our representatives on council, you would currently be looking probably to support approval.
Yes, unless we should stand against the board and make the what I don't see it's the case.
Okay, Thomas.
I have a question out of curiosity. As you all know, the applicant guidebook prescribes that the applicant should demonstrate its financial stability. I see some difficulties with needy applicants in that area. Is ICANN planning to loosen those requirements in order to make it possible for poorer organizations?
Actually, if you read the milestone report, it's not very long, which the JAS submitted. There are a whole lot of considerations about what you're mentioning, mm-hmm. that these things be waived. In other words, they will not be required to fulfill the same requirements as a normal applicant.
Okay.
It's in the milestone report, in the proposal.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, I have a question about that then. As part of the ISP community, aren't we concerned about that? Right? Because aren't we concerned about registries who aren't able to, for financial reasons, let's say, or it could be technical reasons, right, aren't able to continue? Those kinds of, that seems like an odd thing for us to support.
You're right, but the discussion on Sunday was the discussion on Sunday.
Right.
And
right.
I mean, we were talking about, it was political, not based on your rationale.
Well, yeah. You know, whether it comes up, and I agree, I understand what you're saying, but if it comes up in council or if the ISP community wants to raise this in public forum, I think it behooves someone to point out the fact that waiving those requirements is not in the interest of the stability of the operation of the Internet.
You're right. Well, I'm generalizing. There are several comments in the milestone report about what Thomas just mentioned, but
is it a general waiver?
No.
I don't think it's a general waiver.
It refers to certain conditions about financial demonstrating financial capability and the ability to survive.
I find that fascinating from the point of view of the evaluation panels who get these applications in, the ones who have to do due diligence. Some applications are more equal than others, right?
Mm-hmm. That's true. That is true.
That seems
with no rules.
So the practical question for me is: well, should the ISP community speak up here, whether it's in council or in public forum?
Let me just. I would like to not. I wouldn't like to advance any, because I didn't read the recommendations. But it seems to me that the recommendation is not for a general waiver, and not and also it does require that the operation should be. Sustainable, but it's not an upfront demonstration. I think it is an ongoing demonstration of financial viability. It's that's my reading. I confess I didn't read. So I don't know if anybody of you has read the recommendations. And so we are speaking about hearsay.
I read the report very quickly. Basically, there were two requirements that followed upon the application fee, and the application fee was stipulated to be $45,000. And the other two requirements, I remember the second one, which was second-year financial capability. I don't know what the first. I don't remember what the first was on the original DAG, but all three conditions were the same: $45,000, which is a reduction from what is demanded of other people on the application fee and on the other two sustainability requirements. Okay,
Thomas. With respect to reading the report, I have to make the same confession as you just made, but I think that it's futile to discuss whether or not the original political decision had should have been made or not, you know, that's gone, right? But I think that following up on what you just said in terms of stability and reducing the risk of a needy applicant going bankrupt after a short while, and then maybe if the registry is not too successful, I can have huge difficulties for another registrar, for another registry, or even registrars to pick up the portfolios. I think one needs to price into this scenario, or maybe even into these $2 million, to reserve some funds in order to jump in if something goes wrong.
Right.
Regardless of whether they are the requirements are loosened a bit or completely waived, that doesn't make a difference. As long as soon as the financial requirements that are there to provide for stability are loosened only in one small bit, one needs to ensure that somebody picks up the cost if something happens, so that these domain spaces are not jeopardized.
Yeah.
Point well made. Could we ask that certainly the councillors, I think when you discuss this, I mean, some of these points it would be worth raising in council to see where
observations,
that,
right?
You know. Yeah, where that dialogue goes, and I would think you'd get some other people that share these concerns, hopefully, because the time to get clarity on this is when that report's discussed. Is it on the agenda for this meeting here? Approval of JAS? Or?
There is. Is his motion from the JAS motion? Is this on this agenda?
It was.
No, it is not yet, because it's just out for public comment. Everybody could comment on that. It's on the public comment list right now. So it was.
When is the comment period?
I have to check that.
So while you're making a note there, I'm actually looking at the report, and the cost reductions include lowering the risk and contingency cost, and then the two that affect ISPs, I think, or just from my reading, I'll just go through them quickly. The proposal is to review the base cost, which is $100,000, and obviously they've done that. Cost reductions to encourage the build out of IDNs, lower registry fixed fees, which I think is interesting, although from an ISP perspective, maybe not a big deal. But then they have exemption or deferment of IPv6 implementation requirements.
Yeah. That's a waiver I meant.
That's a waiver. And then another recommendation is, and this is the one we were talking about, reduction of the financial continued operation instrument obligation, which I understand that to be a bond, right? That's what that is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bond.
Again, the only reason I read that out is because if several of us haven't read the report, I thought I'd do the oral version.
Well, the more you go through this, and the more I listen to your comments and Thomas's comments, the more we're sort of heading towards engaging on this. And if you have to report, do you have there the timing for public comments? Because as well as asking our councillors to raise issues.
It's not in the agenda for this open meeting.
Okay, well, that's one good thing. That gives us some.
It was only posted for comments about 10 days ago.
Okay, so it should be a 30-day window. Yeah. So, having listened to this, it looks as though this is something we probably should look to comment back on, picking up the issues that you've highlighted, Mark.
And Thomas.
And Thomas as well.
Yeah, it's end of July.
Yes,
29th
of July is the end of the comment period.
Oh, brilliant.
I'm not a member of the constituency, but this seems to be something that is clearly something that the constituency should comment
on. I agree.
I don't know why the IPv6 waiver is something important here.
It's I mean, IPv6 is free in Latin America.
Yeah,
there's no charge for it.
Yeah, I don't know why to waive. There is no advantage for the anybody that will provide to have this waiver. I think it could be provided in IPv6. Providing IPv6.
It was put in by somebody who doesn't know, you know, if it's charged for or how much. Or,
That's right.
Yeah, I don't know why there is no. I don't see the need for this waiver, and it is against the interest of the applicant. So that's my opinion.
Establish another two-class system.
Would be an underprivilege.
You have to guarantee they get IPv4 addresses.
Well, those are also free in Latin America.
No, IPv4 are not free. They're not expensive, but they're not free.
I just think it's... Yeah, I don't think it's the cost that's a problem with them anyway.
I suppose that the concern is the availability of the IPv6 internet service is limited in such a developing country. That's my guess. How do you think about it?
Right.
And if we can suppose the Africa, then IPv4 address is still available for some time. Then for me, it's a bit reasonable, or not. If not reasonable, it just makes sense.
Well, my question about that would be, I completely understand what you're saying when it's regarding transit, but certainly a provider who is located in a place where there wasn't transit could simply tunnel. And provide that service for the time being until transit was available. So even if native IPv6 wasn't available,
in that case, who terminates the IPv6 tunnel is the question.
Yeah.
But anyway, okay, I got your point. Yes, thanks, Mark.
Mark,
regarding IPv6 availability in Africa. According to the timetable, the registry could be in operation in 2013 or 2014. I'm not sure that at that date, Africa will not be in the same situation as other regions like APNIC or IPNCC. So I think I don't see any valid reason to say there will be enough address space, IPv4 address space in Latin America or Africa, because it's in 3, 4, or 5 years that the problem will be.
Right. Mark, can I sort of work with you offline to shape something, maybe share it with you, Thomas, to put something back on the list on this? We've got until the end of July to do it.
Yeah, I'm happy to help. I'm also happy to talk to Avery and talk to a couple board members and find out what the reasoning was behind this and see if there was any technical thought behind it or if it was just trying to find things to waive that would make deployment easier. Probably get slapped, but...
Yeah, I don't understand why they're coming from. Okay, so if we look to do that, Thomas, and share it with you and then put it around the list, and then we'll look to submit something.
More than happy to do that.
Thank you. And I would suggest, hopefully we'll have some answers on this before it is raised in council, the Jazz Working Group, for approval, because obviously if we're going to, as a constituency, respond to the consultation, we want the same approach taken when it comes up in the discussions in GNSO.
It has been already in the and it was postponed.
Yeah, but it's not on the if it's not on the agenda for this week, it's probably going to be a month before it comes on the agenda again. Yeah.
Can I just say two things about that, Tony? On Thursday, Thursday at 11 o'clock in the morning, there is an hour and a half session on developing economy support in the Jazz Working Group. So that's, I think some of us, won't be me, but some of us should attend that with great interest and to think about issues like stability and what it means to ISPs. The second thing is that if there are people that are going from this meeting to the GAC meeting afterwards, the GAC meeting has been delayed by half an hour.
Ah, okay. We certainly were intending to get to there, so that's helpful.
I did a lot there in a short time. So the developing the Jazz Working Group discussion is at 11 o'clock on Thursday, and that's in, ironically enough, the VIP lounge. And
well, with $2 million, that's where it should be.
Yeah, maybe they knew something. I don't know. And then of course the GAC meeting is at 5:30 now, and that's in Canning.
So we have time.
Collier. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
it's at Collier.
I won't be able to go to that because I'm on the non-com when that's on. But and you're out of here anyway, I think, aren't you, Thursday? So would you be able to go, Jamie and Wolf Ulrich, to that? And maybe Thomas, if you're around.
I tried to make myself available for that.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll probably go.
Because that should hopefully answer a few of the questions we've got. We should have a better understanding. And maybe anything that comes out of that discussion that picks up on the points that have been made today, if you could feed them back via the list. And it would be helpful then when we're pulling together any response back on the consultation. But I think Mark's right. From an ISP perspective, there are clearly issues in there which could affect our operations. We should take care to do that. Okay. Wolf Ulrich.
Just briefly, coming back to that, what I mentioned before is with regards to this so-called the summit on... with regards to the implementation or application within developing countries, what is CATIM is going to prepare. There will be a session here as well as a preparatory meeting for that summit.
Isn't that the same?
No, that's different. I think that is on Wednesday, maybe tomorrow, so I'm just looking for that. Tomorrow at 12:30, from 12:30 to 2 o'clock, preparatory meeting on ICANN Summit on developing countries, as well in the VIP lounge. So, so this is, I talked to CATIM, so with regards to whether they are only focusing on the question of getting support with regards to the implementation or the applications. He told me, no, he's just collecting anything with regards to the DNS and implementation also for developing countries. And I wonder, I was since several times, so when I also was in ALAC meeting, I wonder whether this isn't a chance, let me say, for ISPs, which also run, let me say, infrastructure in this way, to come up with something, well, also in this forum, which is referring to the infrastructural question, the basic one. So
yes.
The reason why I'm raising that is that people are all running behind getting new TLDs.
Yes.
And there is a more basic question: what is it about the infrastructure which is needed before you can start to do so? So, and And every time if you talk to people, so some people are saying, yeah, okay, that's a governmental issue or what else in those countries. Yeah. So and so, I would say if from our point of view, we could come up with some item or to be discussed, well, to make it clear. So what from our point of view is needed before you really can start running TLDs, you know, or what is needed as a basis for that. That would be also, I think, that would be very informative to such a forum as well. And Khartoum seems to me open for that. So it is just to start about a discussion, okay, whether this may be of interest for such a forum, or whether they say, oh, nay, just refer to the ITU with this with staff or with anything else to who is in charge of infrastructural questions. So, but I think. So for me, it would be a good starting point also to come to more into discussion within such a forum.
You're going to be pretty stupid to invest all of that money because the 185,000 is just the first of many costs you incur, and if you haven't got the infrastructure, it doesn't make sense to do that. Well, maybe we'll get some other answers out of those two sessions.
As I understand, Wolf, you are proposing that we come up with some proposition.
Well, raise the issue. I think is what. Okay. Okay.
Well, certainly on that, all of that's helpful, and anything that comes out of those meetings, I won't be able to attend them, but anything that comes out, if you can flag them to the list, and then if I work with Mark and Thomas to pull together something that reflects some questions, issues from the ISPs, goes back into the consultation.
But I think we as a council members, we can take the to the council, the notice that we do or consider a problem this general waiver of.
It's a problem due to the lack of detail around it because depending how the waiver's made and what it's for, then it could raise issues for ISPs in terms of vulnerability, infrastructure. And those issues. If it's done in the right way, then we probably wouldn't have a problem with it. But at the moment, I think what the conclusion here is there's too many open questions, too many unknowns.
I have a very, very last point in this respect, you know, with regard to the jazz report and so on. Because we are struggling on council level about a message the council should send in the direction of the jazz group and also to the board with regards the position of the council. Yeah? Let me just briefly explain. It came to that point that we were on the council, some groups in the council have been accused to oppose this whole stuff, this process which is laid down in the chair's report, and so that came up also to the board from board members. So, and so we would like to give an answer to that, which was discussed, and there is now a 4-line suggestion which I would like to read, and if I could get agreement from your side, I would briefly say, okay, it's okay. So it is written in that way. The GNSO Council unanimously believes that it is important for the new GTLD program to be globally inclusive and to have as part of the implementation plan meaningful and workable mechanisms which will assist potential needy applicants inter alia from developing regions of the world, participate in the first round of the new GTLD program as fully as possible. We thank the members of the JAS Working Group for all their hard work in preparing the two milestone reports and look forward to receiving its final report. Full stop. So it's very general.
Yeah, that's fine.
And if you don't oppose or would like to discuss that, so then I would send back, okay, we agree.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I see nothing wrong with that whatsoever. It's not binding us to any of the findings.
Okay, thank you.
You need to sign.
May I ask one question?
You need to sign the sheet.
So yeah, what's the timeline for the final report of JAS? So what timing do you expect? Do you add at that point in the message to the JAS working group?
So it could be that the second milestone report, which is now on for public comment, could be then after the comment period could be converted into the final report. That's what I'm expected. So that needs normally some weeks after the the comment period has been finished. So maybe in August or so.
So it seems that I have talked with some JAS guy. It seems that they are one of them said that they have no timeline for the next report.
Well, the board was certainly demanding the report. They mentioned it a couple of times on Sunday. It was specifically mentioned that we look forward, I think it was in the resolution even, we look forward to receiving the JAS report from and the comments from the GNSO, and acknowledging that it's already been agreed by the ALAC as well. Mm-hmm. So they're expecting something pretty soon. Unless...
I'm quite I'm really concerned that they will come up with that timing. It seems that they're very unreliable. So that the one idea is to ask some kind to ensure the timing for that when you send the message to the JAS group.
Okay, so just to sort of wrap up on that, then there is the issue of these two meetings this week, which some people are going to attend, flag to the list any reasonable information that helps us. And Mark was going to have a discussion with Avery, see if there's anything that we're missing, any knowledge that we're missing on the technical side. Again, we can flag something to the list if it helps clarify our position. But the intent now is two-pronged. One, Jamie and Wolf Ulrich will raise the fact that as ISPs we have some concerns with the waiving of the fee unless there's some more clarifying information around the considerations that brings to the fore as ISPs. And the other is that we will also look to provide some input back to the consultation process. Jamie?
As I understand, there are no strong opposition on the waiver of the fee itself.
Correct. But it's the detail.
The waiver on the requirements of
the requirements,
technical requirements and financial requirements. Yeah.
That's the whole point. I agree. Thomas?
Sorry for being difficult and stepping in again.
No,
on this.
At all. You've been helpful.
But I do think that time is of essence in this process. The applicants, now that the ICANN board resolution has been made, the applicants need certainty now to start the planning, right? So
which is why the board were pushing for this to be concluded from GNSO, I think.
So I think that, you know, asking for more detail and for a more specified process will jeopardize the timely finishing of the applications by needy applicants anyway. So just in a procedural manner, I think what we should go for, if there is consensus in this group, is to ask for a process that provides clarity to the needy applicants almost instantly, so that they can go with the financial privileges, right? So that they know that they can start the work on the application, and that the GNSO or the ICANN board ultimately then quickly comes up with a resolution backing up the technical questions behind it, the stability issues that we might see. But I think it needs to be split at this stage, because if you want to finalize the whole package prior to announcing it to the needy applicants, it might be too late for them to get ready for the application window.
Yeah, the only way we're ever going to achieve that is to go along to these two meetings this week and make those points. Alain?
Yeah, but I think the agenda is quite clear. If you have a look to the board resolution, they will take decision in Senegal, not before. The final plan will be approved by the board in Dakar, not before.
Yeah, that's what they said.
Yeah, you're right. Mm. Yeah.
Okay, but being timely is always good. So, okay, I think we've been around that one enough times. We know what the issues are, and we can follow up and do that. The next item on our agenda, and again I'll turn to you, Tony, on this one, is the new constituencies and an update of where that debate is.
Well, I don't have information on all the prospective applicants for constituencies, but I do know there is one which is very growing very strongly, and it's my impression they'll probably get validated by the board pretty soon, which is the NPOC, the nonprofit organization constituency, which is supposed to sit on the non-commercial side of our house. This was started last year by Debbie Hughes of the Red Cross and Amber Sterling of the American Medical Association. And personally, I've been helping them through some activities I have in ICT4D institutions, and they've grown to about, I think they're around 31 or 32 members already. So it looks like they're on the road to being recognized as a constituency, which is good news, because they are not on the same page with the NCUC on many issues. They're much closer to the way we look at the internet from the business side. And so I think it will be quite a healthy development if they get approved and begin to operate within our ecosystem. We did have in Nairobi, and I think it carried through to Brussels, there was an initiative from an Indian organization to form a constituency of cyber cafes. There was this friend of mine, Naresh Ajwani, from the CCAOI Association in India. They have, I think he said, 800,000 cyber cafes. And he had this project to form a constituency within the ICANN for the cyber cafe community. But I haven't heard about this for several months. Maybe somebody at the table has, and Naresh didn't come to this meeting, so I think that may have sort of quietened down a bit. Yes, that's true. But
since then I haven't heard of him.
And much further back, though, you remember there were a couple more that were coming in, also on the non-commercial side of the house, but I just can't remember who they were.
And I don't know what's happened there. I do know that the other part of that story is that all of the existing constituencies, we had to revise our charters, and we revised them twice. The first time, we revised them to meet the new requirements that came out of GNSO reform. The second time we revised them was when they had been through a process with the ICANN staff, and there were such great differences between the charters, they came back with a common set of elements that needed to be addressed in all of the charters, and I think most of the constituencies then revised them yet again. And they were submitted something like 4 to 5 months ago, the final versions of the charters. And we're at the stage now where Ray Prozac, who's responsible for that on the board, sent a note saying that they were working on a set of a common template on which they were going to look at every charter that's been submitted for every existing constituency with the intent of finalising those charters quite soon. I was anticipating that when we got to this meeting we would have heard back, and I was hoping that we could announce that the charters had been finalised. That hasn't happened. So this is again ongoing business, and hopefully by the time we get to Senegal we should be in a position where the revised charter for all of the existing constituencies has been agreed. At the moment we're not in that situation at all. No one has an agreed charter.
Okay.
So ongoing business on that. We've got 5 minutes left on our official time, and we've got one item left, and this was the opportunity for the councillors that we always provide at our ISP meetings to actually raise any additional issues of concern that comes out of the current discussions in the council. So look to Jamie and Wolf Ulrich and just ask, is there anything that's currently being discussed in council that you want to flag to us, or you want our specific input on?
Well, yes. We didn't touch on this one.
I'll come back to that.
Yeah, it's so very short. A minute.
Okay. If there isn't anything, then
so there is just to update you for the council meeting on Wednesday, that we have just two motions for the council meeting. This is the one is dealing with the IRTP inter-register transfer policy, part B. That I'm not a specialist. I don't know what is it about. So it's transfer between registrars. Yeah, okay. It is that about
inter-register transfer policy.
Yes,
yeah.
You know. But so it's the motion as it reads is so complicated. So and it's so long. You know, it's provided by the registrars themselves. So in special dedicated parts. I think it's more related really to the interests of registrars, so it doesn't touch our business that much, unless you are more familiar with that. So
no, I had a glance at that as well, and I share your views. I don't think it's something that is particularly pertinent to us.
Yeah.
And the second motion is?
The second motion is just for the I think the rules of procedures are also going out for the one part, the proxy voting, and these some voting parts is going out for public comment. So that is to be moved, and then it will be put to the public comment list. But this
okay.
is no problem.
Okay.
There will be mainly reports from groups that working groups that are going on, and the only.
Yeah.
Voting motion will be this one.
Will
on,
be that
on
one.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Tony, you had one item that you missed when we were talking about constituencies, I think.
Yes. Well, it's not really the constituencies. I don't think. There's a very brief item I'd like to just to fly by you. At its meeting on 8th of December 2010, the CCNSO Council resolved to establish a study group to provide the CCNSO Council, CCTLD community, and other interested stakeholders, including the GAC and GNSO Council, an overview of the scope and issues associated with the use of country and territory names as TLD strings and the scope and impact of alternative action paths on IDN, CCTLD, and new GTLD processes. I signed on to this study group, and I only participated in one teleconference 3 weeks ago, which was a little confusing because there didn't seem to be a clear orientation of what the purpose of the group was. Everybody was talking about finding documents and policies about this, but there wasn't much clarity on where to go. But there is a meeting here in Singapore on Thursday at 12 o'clock. I'm going to go to it, and anybody, of course, can go if they want. One thing that this text, which is also a little ambiguous to me, suggests is that it refers to, for instance, a country code being used as a generic top-level domain. An example would be TV for Tuvalu, or most recently .co for Colombia. .co is going gangbusters. I think it's getting close to 2 million registrations in the last 3 or 4 months since they opened it up to worldwide registration. So I seem to sense that this does refer to that, although on the phone call they were also talking about the new GTLDs that might be wanting to use geographic and territory names. That's a little surprising because the guidebook, as far as I know, the latest version, excludes these from this round. This round is not supposed to include generic top-level domains that represent countries or territories. That has been very specifically mentioned and underlined on several occasions that I've heard anyhow. So I'm not too sure how to explain to the constituency what the aims and what will be involved in this, but I thought I'd hang around just to see what it was all about. And there will be a meeting which may throw more light on this on Thursday here at this meeting at 12 o'clock.
Can we put this on the agenda for our next call, Tony?
Have
a catch-up.
It might develop into something interesting.
Okay. Thank you. So with that, I'd like to set a firm date whilst we're here for the next conference call, because we inherently struggle with diaries for this, and the fact we're moving towards the summer break for a lot of people in parts of the world, it would be good to do that whilst we're here. Yes.
We will have, I think, two council meetings or one, at least before the summer break. There is one is scheduled for, just see. July. Yes. There will be a council meeting. So it would be good if you could have this not too far before that, because normally, you know, there are some incoming information. So before, we have a deadline, an eight-day deadline, providing information to the council before the council meeting. So at least this, our meeting...
This is to present the motion.
Yeah, and documents.
Okay, so if it's 21st of July, why don't we pull it back a week and say, I propose 14th of July then?
14th or between, so 14th or 13th or these days, yeah.
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 A particular people that we need are the councillors first, but does anyone have a problem with 14th of July? Do you have
France
a problem?
It's the Bastille
you're
Day.
You're always on holiday, Alain.
Le jour de la
Bastille. Oh, National Day in France.
Oh,
I understand.
Bastille Day.
Oh, yeah, sure.
That's a pretty good reason.
Yeah.
difficult to have a call.
That gives me an awful lot of time to be on the phone.
Can we just put it back a day, 13th of July? And the timing of that, if we normally have them mid afternoon, so if we said 1400
UTC.
UTC.
1400 Singapore time.
Is that okay, Jamie, with you?
It could be a little bit difficult because I have a meeting that is supposed to end at 1400.
So, 1400 UTC?
Yes.
So, let's go an hour then, 1500. Yeah. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll send out notification of the actions and the date for the next meeting. So,
and Tony, can I just lob a grenade in there? That timing is perfect for the ISP constituency to consider a response to the further notice of inquiry on the IANA contract.
Yeah, we should do that.
Sorry.
That's good.
That's the DOC requested that.
Well, that should whet a few ISPs' appetite to join the call, because that is a big issue for us. So I have a number of items on that agenda. I'll get out the agenda and list what we have on there already. And we'll certainly have that. We'll certainly have the update as well on the waiver of the fee as well for the GTLDs. So I think that call is probably going to last longer than the normal hour, probably looking towards 2 hours for that call. Thank you very much for volunteering, Alan. That would be helpful. Great. Thanks. Okay, so are there any other issues for this meeting? If not, we're going to finish just 5 minutes over time.
Just not to bother you, but just a question: is it a wish well to get a short presentation about the new PDP
for that call?
For that call.
Let me have a look at the agenda first. I have got that down on the list, but yeah. Let me have a look at the agenda. I'm just thinking of the time.
Hmm.
If we're going to wade through a draft of the IANA response. Mm-hmm. If there are issues around the waiving of the fee for the introduction of GTLDs, coupled with a couple of other points that have come up, I'm not sure we'll have time, because it may be a 20-minute presentation, but we're going to need some discussion after. Let me come back to you on that as well.
Okay.
So I'll have a look at how I think time will go. I'll have a better answer for that once these other meetings have taken place here on the GTLD issue. So if there's no other points, just thank you all for coming, and we'll close the meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you. There is another motion related to proxy voting.
Yeah, no, we did. Thanks.
Don't forget the list.
No, I'm going to do that. You know that paper you just showed me, that working group? Could you send me a link to that?